his pen ran out of ink, so he had to go and look for another pen.
Oh dear.
And the photo was of some shelves he'd put up.
And every week I used to have to come out and sit here and write, and I can't have music on. And of course, once I got into it, it was fine, but I feel like it's going to be boring. And it was the thought of it that was the problem, not the actual thing.
Oh, I don't know. You know, you can be sitting on the sofa sometimes and you think, oh, I need to go to the loo. And you go, ugh.
Yes.
It's that.
When you were talking about him going out and putting up his shelves and you would be going out and doing the washing and the screwdriver, you just described my morning.
And I don't want to get all preachy because, of course, there's some days that everything just feels like shit and there we are, you know. Hi, Nikki.
Hi, Carrie. And hi, everybody. Thanks so much for joining us on our little journey.
Well, today we're actually going to try to record the podcast because we met a couple of weeks ago to record this episode of the podcast. And we just were both quite tired, weren't we?
Yes, I think jaded might be the word.
Jaded. We had a head full of stuff and we ended up just deciding to not record the podcast and just have a nice chat with each other instead.
Yeah.
But it led us into that sort of thinking about, I mean, that was just sort of tiredness rather than an ADHD thing. But it led us into that thinking about how many things we plan to do, but you end up doing something else instead. And that is a very ADHD thing.
I think actually it was kind of ADHD in a way, because doing this is lovely and it's fun and everything, but it's also a pressure. I'll come to that in a second, perhaps, but it's sort of a should. And we just took the decision that we've got one already recorded ahead of ourselves slightly. So does it matter? Should we just take the pressure off today and just me? And that's what we did. Mm. And it was lovely, wasn't it?
It was.
I can't remember what we talked about, but it didn't really matter.
No, absolutely no idea at all. It was. It was. I think we both just needed that space and time to just relax and be.
Yes.
And like you say, not have to think about the conversation and talk about things that we wouldn't talk on this podcast anyway.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, no. And also, I would like to say that obviously it was littered with horrible silences where nobody was saying anything.
So here we are today. And we thought actually that it would be a good topic to talk about. You know, you set out to do one thing. I don't know about you, Nikki, but I have so many clients who will say, oh, well, you know, I try and do myself a to-do list and I try and do this, but I just don't stick to it. I end up doing lots of other things instead.
Absolutely.
What's your experience of that?
Well, firstly, I'd like a disclaimer here. So firstly, if I sound a bit gruff today, it's because I've been having a lovely bout of COVID. And this ties in with what we're talking about today, I've realised, because I've had, it's not as strong as anxiety, but the episode that's going out over the weekend, this weekend coming, is very late by my definition. And we're sort of 2 or 3 weeks normally, and that's fine. And we're all ADHDers, so as you say, nobody cares.
Yeah.
Will they even notice? Will anybody ever notice? Because, you know, we're all ADHD and do we care about timing? But this one feels a bit late. And I've had COVID. You know, it's fine. It's perfectly fine. And I know you think it's perfectly fine, but I've had this kind of, we're slightly back to the motor, but it's also a should and a pressure and a, and I've got a perfectly good reason, let alone an excuse, but I still feel that.
Yeah.
It's not anxiety. It's not that strong, but there's a discomfort there about not doing what I should have done or think I should have done or something like that.
So that, I guess that's one element of that. I plan to do this, but I'm doing something else. And in fact, I'm the same if ever I can't do something because I'm ill. I find that really difficult. Really, really difficult. I don't know whether it comes for me in this. I kind of like being like a superhuman. I think of myself as...
Yes, you're Wonder Woman.
Absolutely. But I think because I'm fortunate that I'm generally very, very fit and healthy, you know, I can't think the last time I was ill or, I don't know, had to take time off work or something like that. So I pride myself on almost feeling like a superhuman with superpowers and I can always do something. So if ever I have a plan and I can't do it because I'm genuinely unwell, it really I say this word, it's a strong word, but it is it distresses me to be less than fully capable of doing everything.
Yes.
So I think it's worth noting that, because we're going to go on to talk about other sorts of not doing things for other reasons. But illness is a legitimate one. But I wonder if our listeners or other people, you know, with ADHD find that. We both sort of said, you know, that feeling ill, we're both really uncomfortable with it.
Yeah. Well, I have bouts of being ill, though I'm pretty well for somebody with a chronic condition. But it's just frustration.
Mm.
It's because we always have so, as ADHDers and the way our minds work, we have such stuffed lives, so much going on, overstuffed, you might say, but and we're interested in so many things and we want to do so many things and things spark us. Not every single person and not all the time, but as a rule. And I see this in my clients too. And we're all, you know, once you do that and we've got our plans, and this does tie in exactly with what we're talking about today. We've got these plans and we want to, I can do that then, and I can do this and then I can do that. And we may not always plan brilliantly, yeah, but we know, we've got an idea in our mind what we want to get done.
Yeah.
And when we can't do it, it's like, I mean, if it's winter, if it's December and you've got a cold and you've got an excuse to sit there and watch the telly with your feet up with a glass of scotch, that's not so bad in a way. But in the summer, somehow it seems worse because you've got all these lovely daylight hours and you've got all these things you want to do, like the podcast editing or whatever in my case.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I just knew there was no point in me even going there because my brain was full of COVID, and I just couldn't get on. And it's just that sense of being thwarted.
It's interesting, picking up on what you just said about, you know, we have all these things we want to do. I would say that that's one end of the ADHD experience, but the other end of that, I think, is that paralysis that can come when you kind of had no ideas of what you want to get on and do. And I know I've had both extremes in my life. These days, I'm definitely at the let's have a plan, let's have a list, let's crack on, let's do things. But if I don't have that list, and that was my early experience of my life, much younger me,
yeah,
I kind of didn't get on and do anything because I never started anything. And we've talked about this quite a lot, that sort of paralysis. So I think it's, I just felt I wanted to say that because it needs acknowledging that for some people, getting on with anything is really, really challenging.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I see that. It's not something I have. I think the last time I was bored, I was about 14. No, 12. You know, and boredom is a big fear, and it's probably why I stuff everything in, because I have this fear of boredom, that horrible feeling. Sunday afternoonitis, I used to call it when I was a teenager, where it's all dead and nothing's happening. And I can see in my clients, sometimes they do know what they want to do, but they just don't get on and do them.
Yeah.
Or they really don't know what to do. One particular client, she didn't know what to do with her weekends. And at the end of each weekend, she'd feel really fed up. Whereas during the week, there was a structure. So this is back to your wonderful scaffolding. And it's helping people find their own structure that works for them. But no, you're absolutely right. For many ADHDers, there is that either or, extremes, polarities.
Yeah, just going to bed, just lying in bed. I mean, it's interesting, that client of yours with the sort of not knowing what to do with weekends. And I mean, my weekends from being a teenager and in my early 20s were exclusively party Friday and Saturday evenings. And so Saturday daytimes and Sunday daytimes were just recovery. It was literally just sleep it all off, take paracetamol, hangover recovery time, go out again.
And it's all changed.
Yes. Yes. And that's very much not my life now. But I think, you know, so that was one thing. But I think part of that, I look back on it now, and I think part of it was very much what your clients, I didn't have any hobbies or interests, or I had a social life. I remember, you know, when I was applying for my first sort of jobs, it was hobbies and interests. And I thought, you know, it's the old joke about, can I put socializing on it? Because I just didn't really do anything else.
Yeah.
And I look at people today and I think young people who are involved in, you know, my running club or our chorus or whatever. And I think, oh, it's really good for you to be grounded and have those sorts of hobbies and activities and interests. And it is really important.
Mm.
But sometimes, you know, knowing what to do. I have a client who really wants an interest in a hobby and something to do, but just hasn't found it yet. So in their life, they've got into various things, cycling, bought a bike, bought all the gear, decided they weren't into cycling, ice hockey, wanted to take up ice hockey, went to ice hockey sessions, did the learning to skate for ice hockey, bought obviously really expensive ice skates and all the rest of it, just wasn't for them. Rugby, they've done the same with all sorts of things because they really want to have a hobby and really want to have something to do, but they just, nothing's really grabbed them yet.
Yeah.
It's hard, isn't it? Once you've found something, it's really enjoyable and liberating and you can get really into it. But without that, that was very much me.
Yeah, that's really interesting because, I mean, obviously we have the chorus, which is fantastic. That's a major hobby, if you like, a serious hobby and fun hobby that we both engage in. But I was just thinking, I read somewhere on a forum or a Facebook group for ADHDers, somebody came up with a brilliant idea, which was to have like a swap shop for everybody's things that they bought to pursue a hobby.
Love that. Hobby casts off.
Yeah, hobby casts off. It sounds like your client would be spot on for them.
Yeah.
Yes, I used to have a thing where I would start something new every year. I'd try something new every year in my 20s and things. And it was great. And I used to do all sorts of things and possibly not carry on them. One thing I did carry on with was windsurfing. Another thing, I think my stupidest year was thinking I could start learning the drums and playing golf in the same year. Two incredibly skillful, complicated things. And towards the end of the year, I thought, was this the most sensible thing I've ever done? And then I found Focal Dimension and that's it. Because there's so many facets to that. It's not just turn up and sing and go home again.
No.
It's a community thing. So you were saying about your clients.
Yeah. So I have a thinking of a couple of clients at the moment, but it's probably something that underlies with a lot of clients. This having a list of things that they, and here's the word again, should or need to. I don't know, does work fit into should? It probably does and it doesn't simultaneously. So in coaching, we often talk about should as being a sign that it's not your agenda.
Yeah.
It's somebody else's agenda, don't we, Nikki?
Yeah, yeah. Yes, whose voice is it saying that? Yes.
Yeah, but work, I guess, it sort of blurs the line a bit, doesn't it?
It does. It does. It's when people get, for various reasons, they end up doing more than, quote, they need to because they feel they should. And they end up actually possibly to their own detriment and their health detriment doing too many hours and too much stress and too much without actually looking after themselves. And I see that too.
Mm.
And that's a impulsion.
I think that is an element of should with regards to work. I think I've probably said should, certainly when I was still in schools, oh, I should really write this report, meaning I have this report to write and probably the best use of my time would be doing this. So it's different should to the it's somebody else's agenda. It is something I have to do and it probably would be the best use of my time, but I just really don't want to do it, which is different, isn't
yes.
it? It's different yes. sort of should.
Yes. Of course, it comes under that lovely favourite ADHD topic, paperwork.
Yeah.
My favourite.
Yeah. Paperwork is... And you know, for both of us, we're both self-employed. You know, there is an element of marketing or advertising or networking or whatever that is an essential part of our job, but possibly fits under a should for us both, because we'd rather just be working with clients all the time.
Yes, exactly. Well, it was a bit like when I was doing my course
and
my mum died near the beginning of it. So I had some, if you like, legitimate reasons not to get on with my paperwork. So I just did the coaching because that was the easy bit for me. That was the fun, easy, well, fun. It's challenging. It's all those other things, but it was the easy bit for me.
No.
Whereas I had a good excuse not to get on with the paperwork and I already had people booked in for the coaching. So that's what I did. And then, of course, I had a backlog once I got through my mum's funeral and part of the executoring, which went on for a year.
Yeah.
And so that was a shoot that was sort of in the background, and I knew it was there, and I was kind of uncharacteristically sticking my head in the sand and just ignoring it. And then, of course, I had to go back and do it all. But, that's where the buddy thing came in, just as an aside. A buddy of mine and I, we had homework club, and we used to sit and do 50 minutes chat and then 10 minutes on our homework, as in our paperwork, and then, of course, carry on and do it.
Yes.
That, once that started, it's the transition.
But this is a whole thing now, buddy doubling.
Oh, totally. It's so good.
Yeah.
My accounts are up to date for the first time in my life.
And is that because of buddy doubling?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because actually, it's one of my clients. And,
yeah.
And she was saying about her accounts looming and not getting done. And I said, well, mine are a bit behind as well. So we just used accountability with each other and sent each other WhatsApps. And we didn't actually do it together, but we did it in conjunction. Whereas other people I do stuff with, paperwork and so on, we do it in an actual Zoom session. So we just have the window open.
Mm.
It just unmutes.
Yeah. So just for people who may not have heard of that saying before, that's what body doubling is.
Yeah.
It's about accountability, but it's more than just accountability. It's
company.
It is. It's company. It's that feeling of being supported. It makes it an appointment that will happen.
Yes, rather than it just being shoved down the pecking order by other things that are more pulling for whatever reason.
Yeah. So I was talking to a lady this week, and she's a virtual assistant and she works with a lot of neurodivergent people.
Yeah.
And she said a lot of her work is body doubling, that she said people just book in because they've got a report to write or they've got those sorts of things to do. They book in an hour or so with her, that she will spend the time at the beginning just planning it out with them and talking through it. And then she sits there with the tab open while they do it, but they are asking her questions and she's there to give that feedback and that connection.
Yeah. And the bouncing off.
Yeah.
The bouncing off thing. Yeah. Well, because a lot of my clients are in the creative sphere. I know only well from when I was at college, I was in a very small group that should have been about 20 people. And there were only five of us and three of those weren't there most of the time. So we ended up being with the year below, when we were in the fourth year of my degree, we ended up with the third years to give us somebody to bounce off. Because as a graphic designer, you need that, especially when you're a young designer, you need that ability to bounce off other people and to know that they're there. I think there's also an element of co-regulation of your emotions. If somebody's just sitting there with you, it's a bit like if you need a hug, that physical touch. This is extending it slightly, but that physical touch when you need a hug, your oxytocin starts to flow, your whole body calms down. It's somatic regulation.
Mm.
I know it's on Zoom, but it has a similar effect, I think.
I think you're right. And I think if people are listening and this whole episode is that I don't get, you know, what I do instead of the things that I need to or should or even sometimes want to do, that can definitely be a strategy. I remember when I had to fill in a massive piece of paperwork years ago when I was going through a divorce, and it was just so intense. And I find forms just tedious. I hate filling in forms. And so I went to the pub with a friend and I took all my paperwork and everything with me. But she sat and filled in the form, asked me the questions. I just found all the answers and the evidence, but she physically filled it all in, which I guess was sort of body doubling even 25 years ago.
It's the old thing about, rather than giving yourself a hard time because you're not doing it, just work with your body. And the Aikido, I think it's pronounced Aikido, the martial art, where if somebody's coming to throttle you or something, stick their hands around your throat, you don't try and grab their hands. What you do is you sway out of the way at the last second and you push them on the back and then run. And so you're using their body weight against them. And it's kind of taking a different view. And so I treat my brain a bit like that sometimes. When I know it doesn't want to do something, I find a way to divert it or con it, even though I know it's a con. It's my 10-minute con. You know, I can do 10 minutes of anything. And once I'm in it, I know damn well I'll carry on.
Yes.
It's just, come on, Nikki, you can do 10 minutes of anything. Come on.
Yes.
Come on. Come on. It's finding the pull or sidestepping the block, working with your mind rather than fighting.
Yes.
That's the thing.
And so often that bit of company, especially for us as ADHDers who really love that connection, the company is so important. It makes something more fun. To sit with somebody there while you're doing something is much more fun than sitting on your own. You get validation, I suppose, from it as well. So
yes.
Yeah.
It's also stimulating because I'm sitting here looking at you.
Yeah.
Now, I've listened to ADHD podcasts where the presenter does it on their own. And when you looked at me and I said, do you like to do it with me? And you said, yes. I was like, oh, yes, because suddenly it felt easy.
Yes.
And all right, so I do the editing on my own and all that, but that has a different pull because it feels a bit like designing and I enjoy it. But if I had to sit down and write a script or do all the research for it, a bit like you do for your show, I suppose, I would find the thought of it, not the actuality, but the thought of it would feel oppressive.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I'm meeting you here. It's lovely.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's definitely something for people to consider. Yeah, I've talked to some clients recently about what it is, you know, it's finding out what is it that is stopping you doing the thing.
Yes.
Sometimes it's the thing you should, inverted commas, be doing. Mm. There's a blockage there. It's something that doesn't motivate or interest you. Sometimes it's that the distraction, you do want to do the thing, but I mean, the butterfly effect, we all joke about, but the sort of, oh, shiny, and off you go. And yes,
squirrel.
I saw a post on LinkedIn the other day from this guy who has ADHD, and he was saying about how he was working on a paper or something, and then his pen ran out of ink, so he had to go and look for another pen.
Oh dear.
And and the photo was of some shelves he'd put up.
What was that thing I sent you? Oh, on my way to go and do such and such, I ended up redesigning that and doing that. And it was just ridiculous, but it was so true that we get diverted into, you know, on my way out to the garage, changing career.
Yeah. Absolutely. And this is what he'd said, you know, I went to sort of try and find a new pen and saw that in my office that these shelves were lying there. And that was the moment that I decided to put the shelves up. And I think I commented on his post and said, good job. That was only a one step diversion, because I said I'd have probably had to go and look for a screwdriver.
Oh, God.
Which would have meant me walking past a pile of washing, which I'd have then, you know, thought, oh, I ought to put that on, and then got distracted on the way to it. And sometimes that happens. But as I always say to my clients, be aware of what's going on.
Yes.
Because if you know that you suffer with the butterfly effect, there's a strategy. We used to use these at school with kids called Now and Next. And I certainly use it on myself because I'm a terrible butterfly person. I just say, oh. And I'm off, and we'll be in fancy dress and, you know, those sorts of things.
Can I just say you're a very good one?
Oh, thank you. Now and Next is very much that idea of now I am sending this email and next I will do something else.
Mm.
And if you choose to get distracted, you can do it between now and next, but you do now.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So say there's 2 hours between clients one day, and I would just put, you know, 10 till 12 work. And then I have a list of things that I need to do that could be job work, could be home admin or anything else, but they're on the list. But I find in order to help me get on with them, I will highlight one of them.
Yes.
And that becomes my now. And I think, right, I am not doing anything else until my now task is finished.
Yeah.
And then I can have a little breather, be a bit dysregulated, and then go on to a next, which becomes my now.
Yes.
And I think that allowing for dysregulation is really, really important, almost building that time in. I was talking to a client this morning who said, you know, this is me at 50%. Imagine what I could do at 80%. And I said, well, what would 80% look like? He said, I don't think it could happen. I'd just collapse and crash and burn. And I said, but that's maybe about how you're thinking about it, that it's all just do, 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 do,
yeah,
do.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes my clients think that the only other way to be other than as they are is a robot who just sort of mechanically goes through a list of things to do. And it's about finding that happy medium, isn't it? So that comes from self-awareness. I know I'm a butterfly, so I will just go, oh, look, there it is, and off I go. It's understanding what is stopping you getting on with the task. Why do you do other things instead? Is it because it's a shiny thing? Is it because there's some sort of more profound procrastination going on? So is there a fear of what you might achieve if you do it, or a fear of doing it because you don't feel equipped, or, you know, because that's very different, isn't it?
Yeah. I think, there's about 12 things going through my mind, of course. The first thing is to say that when you were talking about him going out and putting up his shelves and you would be going out and doing the washing and the screwdriver, you just described my morning. But did I worry about that too much? No, I was 3 or 4 minutes late for this as a result of it. But I was doing things in between. So I wasn't doing a linear now and next. I wasn't doing one thing and then doing the next thing. I was sort of multitasking in batches, including watching some of the cricket. And the nice thing about cricket is there's an over every time, so you get a minute in between. So I was doing lots of things in the minutes, all sorts of things. So it's one of those plate spinning mornings where I'm trying to keep all the plates spinning, or I am keeping all the plates spinning, and things just happen. Whereas if I try and shoehorn myself into doing one thing for 20 minutes, I would have found that quite constricting this morning. Mm. Whereas on other days, if I'm doing the podcast editing, I'm in it.
Yeah.
I go into sort of mild hyperfocus.
Yes.
I'm sure my wife would say quite strong hyperfocus.
Yeah.
When she talks to me, because apart from the fact I've got headphones and I'm listening to you and me, I go into a different space in my mind. So that's very different. But if I've just got lots of little jobs to do, then I'll potter around and I'll order something, or I'll ring somebody, or I'll do something else. And there's no linear thing going on there at all. It's all kind of random. But at the end of the, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours, quite a lot of things have happened.
But isn't that funny how sometimes I'm more productive when I'm in that sort of...
scattered?
Well, I was going to say flow.
Yes, yes.
But it's not flow like people talk about flow, but it's a different sort of flow, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I just bimble from thing to thing to thing. But I actually end up doing lots of little bits that may not otherwise be done.
Is it productive pottering?
Yes, maybe it is.
That's a new one, productive pottering.
Yeah. And I think that yeah, and actually, I think you've hit on something there that... when we're in that paralysis state of, oh God, I don't even know how to start the things I need to do, so I'm just going to bury myself under my duvet because it all feels too much. Actually, the counterbalance to that is to just get up and do anything.
Anything.
Anything. Get up and go and get yourself a glass of water.
Move.
Yes, because in the getting up and going to find a glass of water, you will get to the kitchen and probably look around and see something that you could do or might need doing. And you can think, oh, I'll run a sink of water and put some of that washing up in.
Mm. Find something.
Even if that's as far as you get, you've kick-started yourself a bit.
Yes, absolutely.
It's overriding the brain with action, which is almost the flip side when we go chasing shiny things.
Yes, and we're hugely motivated and we're going at 90 million miles an hour. Yes,
yes,
yes, yes. Oh, just on a practical note, the to-do list thing. I read this somewhere and actually I've talked to some of my clients about it and it does seem to help. It's one of my American clients found this incredibly helpful. It's that she had, I think we've talked about this before, she had 17 things on her to-do list for that the day before and not surprisingly hadn't done them, and some of them were quite big. And so she now has a brain dump page in her book where she just writes down everything that she can possibly think of that she's thought about when she woke up this morning or whatever. And then she picks 3 small things and she does those. And then she picks 3 more small things and she does those. And that's all she has to do all day. Mm. And when people get stuck, and it's quite often these days to do with things on a computer. So if their laptop's sitting there and I just say, what's the first thing that you could do towards this? And they go into big complicated stuff. And I say, no, what's the first thing? And it's open my laptop or open a window on my laptop. And quite often it's because they think they can't remember. This comes up quite often. Mm. They can't remember their login for a particular website or something they want to do.
Surely everyone has their my top secret book of passwords list.
I've got a very cryptic thing that I've tried to explain to my wife several times in case anything ever happens to me. She still goes, I have no idea what you're talking about. But
oh, well, mine are literally written at the back of my diary with the name of the thing and the password.
Oh, that works well. But I've actually, on occasion, said, is your laptop open now? Obviously it is because they're looking at it and looking at me on it. And I say, so what would happen if you opened a window? It's one of those funny ones in coaching because in some ways you're not supposed to do this. But it's incredibly helpful because on numerous occasions, they've been putting off something for months. Months. And they open the window and I say, well, what would happen if you tried the most obvious login? And it works. And I said, so that was how long? 31 seconds.
Yeah.
And we have a laugh about it usually. I'm laughing because, you know, there but for the grace of God, I'm doing the same thing sometimes. Yeah. And it's like, there's a barrier. And it's a perception. It's not the actual real barrier.
Mm.
It's what I think is the barrier, or I'm afraid I won't be able to remember it, so I don't even want to try kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. Absolutely. And I think that's something else that I hadn't really, you know, when we were talking about reasons why we don't do things, that barrier is a really good one. And sometimes it's a practical one like that, but it becomes an emotional one, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I always think procrastination is an aversion to an emotion that we think we're going to feel because of X, Y, Z. So if we've got a project to do or a report to write, I used to get this when I was writing about healthcare and I was being paid to research in inverted commas. So I'm researching other people's research and write emails for their clients. You know, they're trying to sell products at the end of the day, but it's information. And I'm good at writing. I've been paid to write by global organisations. I can do it. But I think I have an aversion to double history on a Thursday morning with my best friend. We'd sit there at school at the A-levels and have to write solidly for various reasons I won't go into, to do with poor teaching. And it was, I think that's where it all comes from. I feel like it's going to be boring. And I, for 2.5 years, I did these things once a week. And every week I used to have to, it was the beginning of the 10-minute con, because I knew I'd have to come out and sit here and write. And I can't have music on. I need to have quiet for writing. And it's a subject I'm really interested in. And of course, once I got into it, it was fine. But it was the thought of it that was the problem, not the actual thing.
Well, it's the starting, isn't it? You know, because I run workshops and things like that. It's that planning those out. I think, oh, I've got to plan that. I've got to plan it. Oh, I've got to plan it. I've got two coming up in the next couple of weeks. And I think,
I can see on your face the joy.
I love running them. I love running workshops. And actually, once I've started, I will really enjoy planning it.
Exactly.
It's the starting, isn't it? It's the starting.
So what is it? Okay, so just for a minute, when you're thinking about one or both of those workshops and that feeling comes on, what's the emotion that you're trying to avoid, or the feeling or the thought or the whatever it is? What is it?
I suppose it's a fear of lack of creativity. It's a fear that, oh, I won't be able to do it. I won't be able to think of an idea.
Yeah.
I think that's it. And sometimes it's just a fear of, oh, I've got to sit down and slog this one out and get it written. But again, that's not really the case, because I enjoy the process. You know, when I was a teacher, I really enjoyed planning. But sometimes you would sit there at the beginning of a topic, you'd have to plan it out for half a term, and you just think, oh, I tell you what it is, actually. It's one of the things I've always really liked doing is forming a structure out of chaos. So when I was in my job as a deputy head and we had to do a strategic vision and action planning and those sorts of things, I really love listening to what everybody's saying. And in my head, I am piecing together this web and a sequence and a pattern of how it will all work, because I can think really strategically and logically. And that bit of turning ideas into a reality via a process, I'm really, really good at. Really good at. I like a process. I like a structure to hang something on. So I think when I'm at the beginning of this workshop thing, it's like, oh, I've got ideas. Oh, I've got to sequence it all. And it's just that, probably a discomfort of the fact that it isn't sequenced yet. And I know I have to do that.
So it's uncertainty, is it?
No, it's...
Because you know you'll be able to do it. Because you have the evidence now.
Yes, yeah. I think it's just I don't like not having a structure, and it takes the work to put a structure together.
I'm just wondering, does this go back to, you know, when you were at uni and not getting on with what you needed to get on with and rearranging your pen collection and all that, and not having the structure then? Because it sounds, and I have the same thing going on in a different way, it sounds like it's an old emotion, an old program, an old emotion that's coming up from a previous time that's not relevant now, but it's still coming up as a inhibition.
I don't think it is, because it's not an emotional response. I don't consciously think, oh, will I be able to do this?
You looked very emotional just now when you thought about the enormity.
Oh, but no, it's not emotion. It's just it's a slog. It's just, I've got to pin it down.
Is that not an emotion?
No, because to me, an emotion is just... So I might make a face of, oh, I've got to go to the gym, in as much as, oh, I'm just tired and I've got to go and do it. I don't feel emotional about going to the gym, but, and I will enjoy going to the gym, but sometimes I just think, oh, I've got to go to the gym.
See, to me, that's an emotion. That's an emotional response. It's different. It's not being emotional. It's not like I'm going to cry or something, but it's fear of boredom, or boredom is an emotion, I think.
Well, maybe. Oh, I don't know. You know, you can be sitting on the sofa sometimes and you think, oh, I need to go to the loo. And you go, ugh.
Yes, that was last night. Yes.
It's that, which you might say is an emotional, but it, to me, that's not an emotional response. It's just, oh, God, I've got to get up, but I'm comfy sitting here.
Okay, well, we don't often beg to differ, but I think we're going to on this one, because for me, that ugh feeling is definitely an emotion. And that's what I used to get before I came out here to write. And I used to say to my lodger at the time, I said, oh, I've got to go and write, so I don't want to go and do it. And she'd say, you know you're going to do it. I said, yes, I know. I'll just go do 10 minutes. Because it was that heavy Sunday afternoonitis that I was talking about earlier. And actually, we both had the same thing from different points of view going on here, because we're both good at what we're talking about. So I was good at doing the writing and you're good at doing your planning. But I think it's the mountain thing.
Yeah.
Feeling like there's a mountain.
Yes. I think that's all it is. Yeah. And that's why I say, to me, that's not an emotional thing. In term, when you sort of said about, does this link to when you were at uni and all the rest of it? I don't think it does. When I don't want to do things, it's not harking back to an emotion that doesn't serve me anymore. Mm. It's literally just, I've got to get on and do it.
Mm.
And it will be a bit of a slog,
yeah,
because I've got to start with an empty piece of paper and fill it and be creative. And I will enjoy that process once I've started, and it will no doubt all come and all the rest of it. But just that starting of it.
Yes. Well, you know you're creative and I know you're creative.
Yeah.
And I know I'm creative. It's just, as you say, it's that having to do it. So I could be lying in bed in the morning in my little floaty zone that I have before I'm fully awake, being very creative. But then to get up and actually write it all down feels like a slog. Or to speak it into my phone, which is what I do now, which is quicker.
Mm.
I may not be able to speak very well first thing in the morning before my cup of tea. But there is that slog.
And maybe it's the effort involved in getting things out of our colourful mind map, wonder web brains.
Yes, exactly that.
And pinning it down into a coherent process that is accessible to everybody. We've digressed a bit.
Yes. So can I tell you a little story about my mum?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. So just going back to what you planned versus what actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
I actually told people this at her funeral because it was a celebration of her life. And there were lots of funny stories about her. So everybody came in with their own story. But this was my one. And it summed up my mum. And it still makes me laugh now. I hope it makes you laugh. So when I was about 9, we lived in a house in Northumberland that had a very long kitchen. This is relevant. And it was 1960 something, late 60s.
Mm.
And my mum had been out shopping and she came home and she was unpacking the shopping at the other end of the kitchen. And I looked at her and she had a little devilish look in her eye. And she reached into a carrier bag and with what can only be described as glee, pulled out a bottle of orange squash. And I'm looking at her and it was literally one of the very first plastic bottles of orange squash. They were always in glass before that.
Mm.
But I didn't know this. And my mother proceeded to throw this bottle of orange squash and bounce it at me across the kitchen floor, the full length of the kitchen. And it went everywhere. Because it shattered. Because it was plastic, she thought it would bounce. And it went up the walls, all over me, all over the kitchen cupboards. It went everywhere. And she just looked at me for a split second. And you could see that it was like, oh, that wasn't really what I was expecting.
And the pair of us just burst out laughing.
So we proceeded to spend about an hour clearing up after that. But I think the floor was probably sticky for weeks. Top tip, don't bounce orange squash bottles.
No, definitely not. I think that's almost a good example of sometimes the things we do can make everything just take so much longer, can't it?
Well, exactly. Well, I look on the feeling of should, and let's face it, we do have things that we have to do, but the feeling of should isn't helpful, is it? Because it just gets in our way. And whenever I meet a new client, it's easy to spot shoulds and musts and have-tos. But it's what we're saying to ourselves.
Yeah.
It's that self-talk. We're back to the self-talk again. And if we're thinking that we should and we have to and we must all the time, we do mostly have a choice. And it's finding the want for me.
Yes. I heard a brilliant thing about this the other day. It was somebody who was saying, they'd caught themselves saying, oh, I have to go to the gym this morning. And then they changed the language from I have to I get to. I get to go to the gym. I get to go to choir this evening.
Yes.
I get to chat with Nikki and do a podcast. I get to, and all those things.
And
it's just a nice shift and a reframe in your thinking to change it from have to get to. Because actually so many of the things that we do, of course there are some things that you have to, you know. I don't think you could say, I get to go to my mum's funeral or things like that.
Absolutely. You have to pay the electricity bill. Yes. Otherwise, you won't have any electricity. Yes.
Well, but then you get to pay an electricity bill. I guess you could do that as I live in a house that has electricity, which
yes.
millions of people around the world don't, you know.
I can watch the telly.
Yes. But it's remembering ourselves that by and large, most of us, not all of us, but most of us, you know, if you're listening to this podcast now, you can afford a phone or some sort of device to listen to it on and it's some sort of internet subscription. And I don't want to get all preachy because, of course, there's some days that everything just feels like shit and there we are, you know.
Yeah. But it's true. It's that which end of the telescope you're looking at.
Yes.
And what you're making big in your life.
Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah. You know, I posted a while back a video of me doing 100 yards up the hill or whatever it was.
Yes.
And I used to run, I used to do all sorts of things at the gym when I was in my 30s and 40s. And I'd be, you know, I'm not sure I'd ever run a marathon like you, but I've always been incredibly fit. And then I got my health condition and blah, blah, blah. And I tell you what, that running that 100 yards, which actually was 500 yards because I had to record it five times.
Yes.
But anyway, that 100 yards, and I'm now doing it every day. I did it first time after COVID yesterday and I've done it this morning as well. And it's just absolute gold dust. And it's a privilege and a pleasure to be able to do it rather than, oh, I've got to go to the gym. So it's about perspective.
And interestingly, I'm just going to pick you up on something you just said.
Yeah.
You said, obviously it was 500 meters because I had to record it five
yes.
times.
Yeah. Well, no, okay. No, I didn't have to. I chose to record it five times.
Yeah.
And this comes back to when I'm working with clients, is sometimes I hear them say something and I say, well, that was interesting. Shall we just write that down and look at it?
Mm.
And there's one particular client who's excellent at doing this. That sounds like a judgment, but they is very open to doing it and really feels benefit. And they write down the phrase and then we change two or three words. And I say, what could you put there instead? So there's a have and a need to or whatever else. But it's not always like that. It's not as simple as that. And that can be incredibly powerful. And people can do this for themselves if they realise that they've said something. It's catching yourself.
Yeah.
And it's reframing, in effect. But you just change the language very slightly or the opposite sometimes. The opposite. And then see how that feels. And literally writing it down and crossing out the words and putting something else up.
Yeah.
So I can't do XYZ. I haven't been able to do XYZ yet. Or I'm learning to. Rather than I can't or whatever. And it sounds possibly a bit groany and a bit coachy, but it can be so powerful, especially when it's written down.
Well,
and actually, I think handwritten rather than typed.
Absolutely.
Because there's something physical about it.
Yeah, definitely. And you saying then, you know, I had to record it five times. You just sort of said, oh, no, well, I chose to. And I think that can actually be another reason why people don't get on to doing the things they want to do and end up doing something different instead, because some perfectionism kicks in, a sort of, I don't know whether you planned to do your recording or you ran up the hill and thought, oh, I want to record about that.
That was exactly it, the latter. Yeah.
So your plan was not to do it. You planned to go home. Instead, you decided to do five recordings of a podcast.
Yes, or a reel. Yeah.
A reel, sorry. Part of it was you deciding, oh, this would be an interesting thing to do.
Yeah.
But then it went into, and now I've got to do it really well and get it right.
Well, actually, no, it's because I didn't say what I wanted to say. And I realised as I was going along, I was refining what I was. And by the time I got to the fifth one, and I did actually use the last one rather than the first one or the third one. It was as I was going, because it was shooting from the hip, and it was in a really positive way, quite emotional for me, because I felt free in a way that I haven't felt for years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was pushing through. It wasn't so much The way it came out on the reel was that it sounded like I was feeling amazing because I pushed through the fear. And actually, I was just feeling amazing in my body. Mm. I think many ADHDers have this thing that I have, the same thing as it. We love using our bodies. I see it in you too. So even if I don't feel like going for a walk, by the time I'm halfway up the hill, I'm feeling so much better.
Yeah.
And that running was, I've never been a runner. I'm not a runner like you are now, but I love that feeling of my body doing stuff, whether it's dancing or running or anything. And so I felt free and like me.
Yeah.
That was the thing.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, it's been really interesting talking today. And I think we've looked at, there's so many reasons why we do something else instead, rather than it just always being the shiny butterfly effect.
Mm.
Looking at emotions, looking at words like should, looking at elements of procrastination and paralysis and not knowing how to start things, and the importance of sometimes just any sort of movement to help us get on. But I think, I know for my clients, having that awareness of what is actually going on can help them to move forward rather than getting stuck into a pattern of behaviour.
And can I just say, that was a very, very good synopsis of the podcast today. And do you know what? I think you should run some workshops.
Once a teacher, always a teacher.
Excellent.
Yes. Although hopefully in this one, the difference when you're a teacher, the next lesson you're going to say, right, well, you don't say this, but lots of teachers make the mistake of going, so who can remind me what we did yesterday? And there's just 30 completely blank faces in front of you.
Silence.
So I won't be starting the next podcast with who can remember what we were talking about last time, because we don't remember what we were talking about last time.
Well, we did say at one point that we were going to do something that we haven't done yet. And we've got a podcast from ages ago that's quite serious, and we're still trying to decide whether we're going to put that one out. So,
who knows?
Who knows? And they're not sequential at all.
No.
But we don't care.
We don't care. No one cares.
So I can't promise when the next one's going to be out, because as we know, what we plan isn't necessarily what happens. So.
Oh, nice summing up. I like that. God, we're getting good at this, Nikki.
Scary. Thank you for joining us, everybody. And we look forward to seeing you at some point in the nearish future.
Yeah, bye for now.
Bye. Thanks so much for joining us on our ADHD journey. If you can spare a sec, a review or ranking would be hugely appreciated by us. 5 stars would be marvellous, but whatever you think. Every single one really does help. As well as on your favourite app, you can find us on YouTube and Instagram at theADHDConnection_podcast. So we hope to see you on there. Thanks again for listening, and bye for now.